You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. These are our panel of comic books experts. That is Nicole Hale. That is Chris Triplett. That is Chris McFeely. Welcome back from our week.
Wait, if you have experts, then I don't need to be here.
Whatever.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke, but you beat me to it. Thanks.
I'm no expert, sir. I'm the one that comes out and makes a fool of myself. That's why you invited me, right?
No, I mean, like, all of us. Like, we're experts. Experts in
sure.
What?
We're experts in... Okay, well, there's Chris McFeely, and then there's the rest of us.
It's like Gilligan's Island. You know,
so,
you've
got the professor... And then, you know...
The rest.
And the rest.
Triplett and I are like the skipper.
I'm probably like the palm tree in the background or something.
Oh. Not
quite Gilligan status, but, you know.
Yes.
I'm just a broken down boat.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
The, what is it? The coconut telephone? The coconut telephone? Yeah, that's what I am.
God. Hello. So it is Fanboy versus the fabulous DC News, as we'll talk about something that was announced this week. I don't know. There's a lot of talk about it. We're going to talk about it. I think we have maybe a range of opinions, maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out. We haven't talked about it, so that's what we're going to find out. We've also got reviews, per usual, so those will be a lot of fun. We've got some annuals that have started to come out, so some of those will be talked about. So, good things that are coming up, yes. So, Chris McFeely, then, it is time to tell us what the word is.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to see, remember out of the last 2 weeks if there's been anything major that wasn't the big news. But I guess, should we just start with the big news?
Well, I mean, I would like to mention that my comic has been canceled.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's start with the fact that it has been announced that JLI number 12 is the last issue of Justice League International. But I think what you have to stop about is, first of all, this is something we haven't mentioned on the show before, which is maybe you guys haven't heard it and it hasn't been officially confirmed. But all awesome inside sources signs are pointing towards the fact that September will not be issue 13 of anything, but will be issue 0. It will be an issue 0 month. This is not confirmed, but this is what the intelligence speculation is favoring. And study of the solicits for August are showing a lot, like a disproportionate number of books saying, the final chapter of, last bit of, all secrets revealed, all the rest of it. Looking a lot like there's going to be a 0 month, like 1 year in, catch up, 0, fill in some of the backstory stuff. So the fact that Justice League International may be ending with 12 does not preclude Justice League Internationaler starting with issue number 1 in October. I don't think that book is going away. I think that book is just changing into something else.
Okay.
Because I would be surprised if they cancelled one on its own right now, just the way they have these things structured.
They would have to fill in with another book so they can keep that 52, right?
Well, maybe I didn't read... I thought I read a story that seemed to indicate, though, that it was like, nope, this is the end of it, and it's done, and moving on, but they're going to keep... But they did say in it they're wanting to keep 52 titles, but like I said, I may be wrong.
I'm just speculating. I just think that the book is going to turn, and maybe the creative team will change, maybe the creative team will stick around, maybe Booster will just get his book back.
That would be great. And that would coincide with the TV series.
I'd much rather he got his book back, actually.
Like, I'd much rather it be a Booster Gold book.
The thing is, as soon as
I got into Booster Gold, that's what they didn't have him anymore. So it's all my fault.
I'm sure they will replace it with something to keep the 52, but I think in this case that whatever they replace it with will be a much more direct one-for-one replacement. Like, it will be the continuing adventures of these characters or some of these characters or something by these creators that'll be related to it. That's my guess. But the 0 month is currently the hot goss.
That's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's good, interesting, or bad, interesting, but it's interesting that they might, you know, do something like that. I'm assuming, like, filling in a bit of backstory would, is something we're talking about?
Yeah, presumably. I mean, as the year has rolled on, the vagueness of the history of the New 52 is becoming more and more apparent as it moves further away from...
I got an idea. They could do a zero issue for each of the 52 books and then give it a really snappy title like the Zero Month or
Zero
Minute or Zero... Oh, 0 Hour. Oh, wait, they did that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did that one already.
That's, wait a minute.
When you said they were going to do a zero issue, I kind of was thinking, so what are they going to do? They're going to, like, the next issue is going to be like number one and then like season two starts?
Ooh, no.
That's what I was thinking.
But no, I'm thinking it is kind of funny that we're talking about that they're going to have a zero issue to do this. And the joke a year ago, I seem to recall that we were saying about this, was that, you know, they're redoing all this stuff and we're probably going to have to have a 0 Hour to fix some of the stuff. So it's kind of like, wow, huh. It's like we're psychic. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the solicits say, you know, They specifically say anything that mentions like repercussions of stories specifically mentions issue 13 and not next issue. You know, just there's some curious language in the solicits that people have copped onto. I mean, it may be wrong, it may not happen at all, but it's currently the intelligent speculation, so we'll see about that.
Okay.
What else happened in the last 2 weeks?
Drop the trailer for that Justice League fighting game. Injustice Gods.
I did not even see it. That was happening.
It is the guys that made Mortal Kombat, made Mortal Kombat versus DC, doing a Justice League fighting game. But the catch is, they are evil versions of the Justice League.
Oh.
They're basically, you know, the Injustice Society type versions or something.
So, and is that the only characters in the game, or are the regular Justice League in there as well?
I don't know. They haven't told us. The trailer just shows these evil versions. But the awesome thing is, one of the characters is Solomon Grundy, and he can hit you with a tombstone. Awesome!
So it's supposed to be evil versions of the Justice League, but it's not like...
They showed an evil Superman, an evil Batman, and like an evil Wonder Woman that I think has guns or something. I don't know.
Ultraman, Owlman, and
Ryan,
Power
that's
Woman?
What I'm saying.
They were not.
Why not?
It's
they
not,
were Batman, not... Superman, and Wonder Woman, but they are like alternate version reality evil versions or something. Like the tagline was like, "What if our greatest heroes were our worst villains or something?"
Yeah,
I don't know what they're doing with
it's
it.
Called
Earth
3. It's called the Crime Syndicate. Yeah, I mean, this is not an odd concept. This is something that there's precedent for.
Well, when I saw it, I was like thinking more Justice Lords than I was thinking Injustice Society, which was very awesome. By the way, Justice Lords. But I don't know, that is a thing that happened. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Man, so like, did Fun Publications come up with this?
Yeah.
No.
Video game out of a one joke mirror universe concept?
Wow.
Yeah.
Shattered Glass Justice League.
Yeah.
I think the more interesting thing would be to see if it actually comes out.
Instead of a red outline and the yellow interior. It's got the red interior, the yellow outline. Very inventive.
Maybe it was just all black. It should be black.
Yeah, it's all black.
Is it like when they did the Mortal Kombat versus DC game? DC wouldn't let any of the DC characters do fatalities. I wonder if this is supposed to be their way around that. They're all evil, so they can kill
Superman
you.
Just cut your head off with his laser vision.
Well, they showed like Superman like kill somebody with his heat vision in the trailer, so I don't know.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
because that's what we need.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like
you know, for kids.
Right.
Yeah.
For the youngins.
In keeping with other media, I just remembered we did have more news about Iron Man 3.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes. Now, this is odd, okay? There's odder and odder things keep happening surrounding this.
I saw the image. Did you see the image?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Even before that, the most recent bit of news we've had about this was the announcement of two more characters. Now, I'm going to need to actually just look up the names of the actors so that I can report that properly. But the characters in question were the real alter egos, the alter egos of Firepower and Cold Blood. You know them well-known supervillains.
Of course, I know who they are.
Well, Firepower was the end boss of Armor Wars. So, you know, that's a notable enough Iron Man guy. Cold Blood is not an Iron Man villain, so I don't know. But anyway, the actual announcement did not announce these guys as Firepower and Cold Blood. They announced them as their alter ego names, which I don't even know.
Yeah, Cole something or other, maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm just digging it up here so I have it. James Badge Dale will be playing the character who plays Cold Blood, and Ashley Hamilton will be playing the character whoever is Firepower. But the interesting thing that then happened this week was that Badge Dale, the Cold Blood-esque character, was seen in set in the Iron Patriot outfit.
Norman Osborn.
Yes. Yes. It makes
what?
Things that make you go,
There's two things that bother. Well, I guess do the. Was there something else, or was that the only one? Because I don't want to go off on a tangent.
Well,
until
who's
we get
writing
that
this? Have they announced who's writing this?
I don't know who's doing the screenplay offhand. The Shane Black's directing. But the word is that it looks like these are just going to be like the goon level villains in this, and they're saying that the real villain is the villain from Extremis, the Warren Ellis storyline. But they're also reporting that, first of all, we heard Ben Kingsley was involved with the film. And again, it hasn't been officially announced in any capacity, but the rumble is getting much louder this week that he is going to be playing the Mandarin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And,
I've heard that rumor's been going around for a while.
Oh, yeah, no, but first of all, they heard he was in it. Then everybody thought, hey, the Mandarin, but like that was just everybody jumping to conclusion on, and now it's seeming a little. It's not official, but the rumbles are louder. But the word is that he's not going to be the main villain of it. He's not going to be secondary to the extremist guy. And what I would assume, nay, hope, is like an evil, shadowy, supporting, funding type role.
Like a setup or something for something bigger, maybe down the road. Maybe.
Maybe the next film, if we could cut to the chase.
Okay, well, the real question is, will we get an Iron Man 4, though? Because, I mean, come on, guys. Come on, like, guys.
He better be playing the Mandarin, because Ben Kingsley is not Chinese. But at this stage, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't make an Iron... I wouldn't make a Batman trilogy and not put the Joker in it. I wouldn't make a Superman trilogy and not put Lex Luthor in it. I wouldn't make a Spider-Man trilogy and not put Dr. Octopus in it. So give me the fucking Mandarin.
I agree.
Yeah. But the other thing that is like, I mean, the Iron Patriot, it's not like that absolutely has to be Osborn.
Oh, not at all. It's just somebody trying to trump Stark.
The thing that pisses me off. We're going to have Tony fighting damn armor again. Jesus.
Well, that's Iron Man altogether.
God, can we not?
But wait.
Where's MODOK? There's plenty of like, people that Iron Man could face that,
like,
you know.
All I care is when is Fiend Fang Foom showing up.
Yes!
You know, that's,
hopefully, if the Mandarin is the main villain of Iron Man 4, he'd best have Fiend Fang Foom backing him up.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
I mean, from this, I think it can probably be speculated that we might be looking at an Armor Wars-type scenario for Iron Man 3. If we're seeing some armor-powered goons who are actively using their armor as a means to show up Tony, but, you know, with an Iron Patriot-style suit and screams just showiness and trying to show up the previous guy in the suit, you know. And if the extremist storyline is involved, then that seems like a logical route to go as the next step in the technological arms race for Tony to improve himself and beat the guys who have stolen and are using his technology. That happens. Mandarin fumes in an after credits scene, and that's your film.
But as you guys bring it up, Norman Osborn, would they not be able to use him because isn't they're running into that same problem?
Yeah, no. He would
Sony
be tied up.
Probably owns it.
Yeah,
he would be.
Yeah,
yeah. I wouldn't want Osborn in it anyway. He would have no.
Yeah,
place.
I don't want him there.
It's not,
it's keep
not
Osborn away from the Avengers as much as possible at this point. For God's
All that comes down to is that in picking Iron Patriot, one would assume they've just picked a flashy, eye-catching suit of armor from the comics to give a character who is essentially a nobody something to wear to look good in a fight with. I don't have any problems with that.
And Osborn is never going to cross over.
Would that be an indication that maybe Cap might show up maybe in the movie? Is that a possibility?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, there's not been a lot of talk about that as being a possibility, but I mean, it is an interesting question because now we can sort of see the other Avengers possibly crossing.
Something.
But I would think that cost would, you know, be an issue with that in a sense. I mean, because now you're talking about negotiating for an actor's contract, how many films, and
so. Well, I was thinking cameo, if anything.
Oh, well,
like
that's certainly.
In Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, I mean, if the Incredible Hulk could get Robert Downey Jr. to appear in that little scene.
Sure.
It's like, we got to build you Avengers 2, so, hey, guest stars, cameos, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that'll be the thing, too, is I think that we're probably going to see a new storyline that's going to build into the next, you know.
I don't know how necessary it is to...
Well, the threads, at least. I mean, you know, like, this was very small threads that led into the larger bit, so...
But that was because the world needed to be slowly introduced to the idea of the Avengers. You know, now that the Avengers is out there as a concept, I don't think that it is really at all... Not to say that they won't, but just from a simple storytelling point of view, I don't think it's at all necessary to actively have to build the story towards Avengers 2 in the intervening films now. Just from that point of view.
My only question is there going to be Loki? Come on.
Yeah, they have said Loki will be in Thor 2, but that the he won't be the main villain. The main villain will be.
I don't care. They've got my buddy. If Tom Hiddleston's in it.
Grey Gargoyle. There you go. I'm sold.
I'm assuming they'll probably go for something more mythical, like maybe Mangog or Ulik or something like that, or Surtur.
Surtur, yeah, I could see Surtur.
Surtur would be awesome.
Surtur would make sense in a strange way, considering the way they've done it with the realms and everything. Yeah. All right, well, let's get to it. Let's get to the big thing, though.
Yeah, the big thing. Well, there's two big things, because we weren't here to announce it last week either, which is that comics have turned fabulous in the last couple of weeks. With the confirmation, first of all, of the abundantly obvious puzzler that was fooling no one, which is that Northstar is getting married to his boyfriend in Astonishing X-Men next month.
Dude, that was such a big thing that my brother, who knows nothing about comics, asked me, "Hey, who is the character who's, you know, getting married? It's like a gay marriage in comics." I was like, "Are you talking about Northstar?" I guess. I have no idea what his name is. I just heard about it on the news. So it was like enough that he knew about it.
Well,
but that was
because Marvel made a big deal out of it. But the funny thing is they first made a deal out of it, like, who's it going to be? And it's like, duh.
One gay guy.
Who's it going to be? It's going to be that one gay guy who's actually been in a stable relationship for a long time. Probably him. Yeah. And they just happened to make prominent.
The funny thing about it is just that, like, the wedding's probably going to happen in, like, the last three pages, because there is actually a superhero story going on in Astonishing X-Men right now, which has nothing to do with this. This is just Northstar dealing with his relationship troubles in between. I mean, Northstar has been having some troubles with his boyfriend lately, and in true Northstar fashion, like, he just thinks that the answer to these things is to do something loud and impressive and proposes. And as of issue 49, or is it 50? As of issue 50, Kyle, the boyfriend's name, he's turned him down. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the next issue. But, you know, it's probably going to happen on the last page. So, just so as you know.
That's coming out this Tuesday? Is it this Tuesday?
No. Is it this week? I don't think it's this week.
Probably. I was thinking it was already out, but I didn't know.
Issue
50 was out, and the issue 50 has the cover of the pair of them holding hands and everything. So it's like, you might, just to deceive you into thinking that's the issue you need. and of course, then on top of that, we have had DC's announcement after a couple of weeks of speculation that a pre-existing character is going to be gay in the new 52, and it turns out it's Alan Scott.
Oh, those liars. DC lied.
They did not lie.
They lied, but they totally
bent it to almost breaking it.
No, they did not.
There were at least two parts to this lie. Now, one is that it was a character who hadn't appeared yet. Alan Scott had appeared already.
Yeah, which is, that was sort of I think that's one of the deals where the press release was written before, because I think the press release came out, like, right about the same time the Earth 1 came out.
No, well, this is the thing. You know, if DC is to be complimented for anything in all of this, where Marvel is not, where Marvel made a circus out of it, DC didn't go this route. DC just casually announced that a gay character could be expected to be seen in response to a question somebody asked at a panel at CapoCon in the UK a couple of weeks ago. And it was not until the news sites jumped on that that any kind of response occurred. They were not kicking up, because this comic comes out next week. The comic that will confirm this in page is next week, you know.
Right.
So it was only a couple of weeks beforehand. They did not build this up for months as a big media thing. And they have to be complimented for that, because, you know, what have we said in the last, in this year so far, has been the best handling of this kind of topic was when Max Modell casually mentioned it in conversation.
There was no fanfare about it.
There's no need for all this fanfare.
Marvel's been pretty good about that too, because you think again, like Scarlet Spider, there's gay characters in that, and there's been
It's like gays in X-Men, and then you're like, anybody reading X-Men who's protesting the presence of gay characters probably shouldn't be reading X-Men.
Yeah, it's kind of missing the point, really. I mean.
You kind of missed the point of the metaphor for X-Men for the last 50-odd years there, guy.
Yeah. Dude, I just want to see Wolverine cut some dude. What are you talking about?
Thank you, 90s.
So the whole thing about this hype is that a lot of people are taking bets that I know. Oh, who's it going to be? Because people are thinking it's going to be a major character.
I swear to God, I thought it was Vibe. That wasn't a joke when I said that last time. Like, I still
had my hopes up for Cyborg, because I'm like, that would be totally controversy. For have Cyborg, but of course.
You can have a minority or you can have a gay.
That's hard to do both.
I mean, because like when they say a major iconic character, JSA. I love Jeff Johns JSA, but I have a hard time saying, hey, Alan Scott is a major iconic character.
They didn't say major. They just said iconic.
What's iconic about Alan Scott?
He's a Green Lantern. The Lantern is a symbol. It's
completely unrelated to every other Green Lantern.
I missed that scene when Alan Scott guest starred in the Green Lantern movies, what you're saying, right?
Well, okay. The thing that gets to me is when I try to explain this to people, I'm like, okay, it's Alan Scott. He was the first Green Lantern. Are you saying the guy who Ryan Reynolds played was gay? And I'm like, no, that's totally a different Green Lantern.
If I had a nickel for every 2-bit showbiz rag website that's reported, will Ryan Reynolds play camp in next Green Lantern?
But that's
like,
the thing that pisses
no,
me off.
No, because it's nothing to do with that.
Well, the thing is, like, 80% of the sites that I've gone to that talked about the outing of the Green Lantern, they always showed Hal Jordan's character. They rarely showed Alan Scott's.
But that's because the news that people are running with is that it's Green Lantern in order to try and make it seem like matters.
Yeah. Well, and that's,
I mean,
and
does it,
but it, to be fair to DC, DC's not doing that. All DC
let's back up and not take
what other people are taking out of it. DC said it was going to be an iconic character. I think lie. It's fair. No, it's fair to say the Earth 2 original Green Lantern is iconic. It's iconic to them.
No. You're wrong.
Okay.
It also just so happens that it's not a character from the New 52.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
It's
somebody
not
from
an alternate Earth.
Universe. They're not even infecting the real universe with their gay.
The regular universe, so there you go. That's another.
It's Earth 2. The multiverse has been around for a long time. They just haven't dealt with it.
You know what the incredibly detailed thought process James Robinson put into making Alan Scott gay was?
What's that?
Well, he's young and he doesn't have a gay son anymore, so he can be gay instead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's why Alan Scott is gay now.
What's going to happen with his kids? Jade and Obsidian, I mean...
Gay people can have kids.
My sister's gay. She has a kid.
Characters don't exist, though, because have they even been introduced yet?
They don't exist because Alan Scott is like 20-something now. don't exist. But there's something a bit blunt about subbing one gay character in for another. Not that, I don't give a toss that Alan Scott is gay. And really, that's the attitude that you would like to see on display, is like, gay, terrific. Is the story good?
Yes, I think that's the thing again. But I think the media has gone crazy with this. I think people have taken, I mean, that's where I'm saying, like, I think we've gotten too hyped up on this iconic thing, you know? Iconic is a debatable thing.
Using that word immediately made people start guessing it was Jimmy Olsen, you know? Or I mean, as far as characters who haven't yet appeared in the, like, new, I don't know if Jimmy has appeared. No, he has appeared in Action Comics,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, he's in Action. Yeah.
But, it's not like it was ever going to be Superman or Batman.
But
you know?
But it's not like DC is the ones going nuts with this. They didn't make a big fanfare about it. They really haven't. You know, it came out and got announced this week. It's not a big deal.
Be complimented for that. Absolutely.
It's the media and everybody else that's making a big deal out of this. So,
in these progressive times, it's everybody point and look.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So... I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I liked the first issue of Earth 2. I found
Earth 2 was good.
So, it was good. So, I'll keep getting that book.
I'm expecting good things out of it.
And, of course, I mean, the ultimate test we'll be seeing, you know, if Earth 2 and the stories about Alan Scott continue to be about a superhero-type man who saves the world and is part of a team and also happens to like dudes, instead of being a story about a guy who likes dudes and also does some superhero stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it can be just as... The trick is, you don't want to, like, completely ignore it, but you want to give it the same credence and value that happens in other books as well. But...
Yeah.
The other confusing...
Carolina in Runaways, or that, you know, where it's not what she's about. You know, yes, it's the case, but they don't... I don't imagine they will, because
the
way...
This is from the same company... But here's what I'm saying. Like, this is the same company that had Batman and Catwoman fucking on a rooftop. So
that is true.
You know what I mean?
I do not think we are that progressive.
I
don't think we're that progressive yet.
And also, Starfire is some sort of prostitute thing.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that I think that you can give that story some time. And I think... Some of the shots that I saw, it looked like he has a partner or whatever in it, or has a boyfriend or something. So, I mean, I think it's okay to explore that bit of the story, as long as it's not like, you know, every 5 minutes about that. Just because...
As much attention as any romantic plot in any comic gets.
Hey, but here's the big thing. It's a DC character that has a fucking relationship. So let's talk about that for a minute, and
Buddy has a relationship, Animal Man. He's got
and he's like the one,
and now we've got
to stay married.
We've got another, you know. I mean, Batman Annual. We're gonna talk about that in a little bit. How much is that? You know, You know, You know, not even fucking horrible people. You know, can have one shred of happiness. So. You know, I'm fine with it. I'm glad that at least somebody has a relationship, you know, in this crazy fucked up DC universe where apparently marriage and relationships...
DC universe. Not the regular DC universe.
Not the regular one, no. You have to live in a parallel universe.
They have to live in a parallel universe to have a happy relationship.
It's not
if you live in the regular universe,
it's not Elseworlds. It's not Elseworlds. It's just another Earth. It's not like a parallel, like, shattered glass universe.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another Earth. There's
DC's been
fun
pumped. God.
All right, we've wasted enough time on the news. Not wasted, but...
And you'll notice that every single one of us refrained from making the joke that every other website about how Alan Scott's weakness to wood is probably going to get in the way of that relationship.
Including...
Why'd you have to say it? I hope we could get past this without anybody saying that.
Including, like, some comic book creators as well.
It was announced. It was, like, all over Twitter. Like, I had, like, 2 or 3 people on
Twitter. Wood.
Yeah. I was like, really? Really?
Penis.
You're... I don't know. That's
erection!
Wait, I'm tweeting that.
That is just so juvenile. I mean, I just can't... I was pissed off. I actually was pissed off at one person, one of the creators that I saw that said that I don't like their work and I liked them as a person, and now I'm like a little bit like, really, that was not called for, but whatever. Anyway.
Well, to be fair, it's right there.
It is, but it's, I don't know.
I mean, if they thought they were the first person who'd thought it up.
Exactly, because it was like a week and a half later, too, and I'm like, really? Like, you really needed to make that joke? Like, 500 people haven't made that joke, you know, on your own feed already?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Great. Anyway, internet is awesome. Internet. Or not.
It's great. Our show, horrible. But at least we're not superhero time.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh. No, I'm kidding. I have fun on that. I'm having a lot of fun over there, actually. So if you want to hear me make a lot of masturbation and poop jokes, listen to Superhero Time.
I don't know enough your mom jokes to...
That's okay. You probably know some masturbation or some poop jokes. You could listen.
You talk about going down the toilet.
Oh, man. Are you listening? Are you listening to Superhero Time? I'm so sorry if you are.
I got the last one.
Oh, yeah. Mickey and I, you put Mickey and I on the same podcast, and wow. Let me tell you. All right. Let's get to it then. To reviews. We have two weeks of reviews to do because we were at last week. So everything is on the table. Chris Triplett.
Yes.
Have a go.
All right. I suck because I didn't get my comics this week.
Well, we knew that, so, but you're saying you suck because you didn't.
I specifically suck because I didn't get my comics this week. That's the current reason.
Yeah. All right.
So I'm going to review a comic from last week, but it just so happens that it was an awesome comic, and we weren't here last week, so I think it deserves some discussion because it was great. That comic is Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, number 5. Oh, my God.
10,000 pages? Felt like this book had 10,000 pages. I was like, man, this
is great.
Remember
when every comic was this dense?
Yes.
Actually, I don't know if comics were
awesome.
Ever this.
Awesome.
I certainly don't remember when Transformers comics were this dense.
No, I don't think Transformers comics have ever been as dense as this. I mean, maybe the 11 pages.
One page would make up like an entire Transformers comic back in the day.
Like maybe two 11-page Marvel UK stories end to end could be about as dense as this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like every page has something good in it. You're like, oh, it's something with the background. Sometimes it's making you laugh. Sometimes you're like, oh crap, what's gonna happen here? Yeah,
I mean, because
awesome.
Like I don't even know if I really even need to talk about like what's going on in the issue. Like the big takeaway.
Well, have you got an hour?
Yeah, really. I mean, exactly. I think the most important thing you need to point out in the first is the first page.
Yeah.
Which is tell us what that is.
I don't like.
It is Fortress Maximus tearing a Decepticon in half.
It's like, that's for Jazz in the movie.
And but I still don't know how I feel about this. I just like everybody I've seen responding is like, whoa, yeah, awesome.
Dude, it's Fortress Maximus going Incredible Hulk on a bunch of Decepticons. Yeah, what's not to like about that? You can make jokes about how he lost his head and he went crazy or something. That's awesome.
Optimus Prime puts one bullet in one dude, and he's the fucking Antichrist?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know.
Decapitate one guy with his shoulder compartment, which, half of me is going, fucking awesome! And the other half of me is going, really?
Yeah, and I think, too, it's
it
like...
It makes you feel ways about stuff, and I'm not used to that.
I still have to, stop myself and go, okay, we're in the IDW universe, because it's like, I'm thinking, you know, your previous impression of Fortress Maximus is like the, you know, Marvel cartoon, like, tear my head off instead of, like, having to fight a war against the Decepticons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So
I'm a pacifist. I would never rip a Decepticon in half.
Yeah, and so and this one is, like, rip them in half, punch them in the face until their head collapses, you know.
I like to think Spike is inside of his head, but it's like a skeleton. He died a long time ago. And that was like one thing that was like holding him back, and now he's like Hulk or something. That's what I like to think. Anyway.
This guy's begging, you know. This guy's running, trying to escape, and he's begging for his life. There's nothing. This is infinitely more brutal than Optimus capping that one dude who'd already killed loads of humans as it tried
yeah.
to.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The second movie, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet
sure.
everybody's going, this is awesome, brilliant, super duper. And I'm like,
yeah, but Optimus Prime can't do that. He's a lofty essence of fat nonsense. Yes.
Optimus Prime would cap a dude before he would tear his own head off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Any version of Optimus would do that.
We haven't seen a lot of IDW Fortress Maximus, to be fair, but.
Didn't he have like a spotlight and that was it?
A large portion of me acknowledges the awesome, but I'm looking at him going, it makes me feel bad in my tummy.
Yeah, I think it should. If it doesn't, that's I am a little scared.
I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because, like, horrible things are going on in this comic. You should kind of feel bad because there's, like, awful things are going on.
Really awful,
and,
awful
you know, just,
things.
Yeah, I mean, just it's just like the stuff like there's this facility and everybody's got this disease and it looks like they're bleeding out all over the place and just dying these horrible deaths. I mean, how could you read this comic and not feel bad? I mean, it's grimy.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it is totally like a. I mean, it's some of it's part detective story, part virus, part like outbreak sort of deal where. Trying to find the contagion, and so to speak. And then there's just, like, interesting bits. There's so many bits to this. It's like, I don't even know how to put the bits back together because, I mean...
It's really difficult to talk about. I mean, it's basically, it's just, like, the best Ratchet story. It's a really good Ratchet story.
Oh, my gosh.
When we last had a Ratchet story. It's been Marvel Comics since we last had a Ratchet story.
Like I said, this is making Ratchet rank up go higher in my ranks for favorite Transformer. I love Ratchet. Oh, my gosh.
I've loved Ratchet since Transformers Animated. You know, give or take, G1 Ratchet. I don't really care. TF Animated made me love Ratchet, and since then, I've loved Ratchet. And
I agree.
And Jeffrey Combs is Ratchet on Transformers Prime also. So
I agree with you.
But then like the story is basically, I guess you want to probably encapsulate it, I guess, a little bit in the sense that the story is sort of trying to find the patient zero and cure for this rust disease, along with, some vignette pieces, including Red Alert, Tailgate.
Ultra Magnus, which is awesome.
Ultra Magnus and Tailgate, which is awesome, awesome. And then this, like, I got confused in here a bit because there's a couple of the newer characters that I'm like, okay, you're who? And then am I supposed to know who you are? Because I don't.
Are you talking about, like, Pharma?
Pharma, and yeah.
Ambulon? I love that name.
Ambulon.
Yeah, like how it's really dense. It's really hard to talk about it, but it's just like you said, it's just kind of like a little. It's a story where trying to figure out what happened here, which I don't think we should blow it. People should read this for God's sakes. If you're Transformers,
well, you definitely don't want to blow the primary story, but I think we can talk about like the Tailgate vignettes are important. I think there's an interesting bit in there too.
How many people are starting to really love Tailgate?
Man, I was over Tailgate already.
Yeah, I loved him.
I just want to see. I want to see him team up with Swerve.
Little...
Oh my gosh!
I don't know. Him and Swerve have been doing fine already, but like him and Magnus have just become the next great double act with this issue.
Oh yeah, this is great. Great stuff here. But tell us about the vignette then. Tell us about this first bit with Ultra Magnus and Tailgate.
Yeah, so like Tailgate, as we've read previous issues, we had the big shocker that he's been gone for a while, so he didn't know what was going on with the Great War and how everything went. So when he found out, he decided that he's going to choose a side, and he decided to choose Decepticon. We all went through this, and there was our big shocker. Oh wow, he chose Decepticon, which he's since been given a little bit more information and decided, no, I'm not going to be with those guys. They did bad things, so he's decided to be an Autobot. And I guess since Ultra Magnus is, the big commanding honcho there on the ship, he's got to be the one to indoctrinate him as an Autobot, which involves this scene where they basically have to go over, what was it called?
The Autobot Code.
The Autobot Code. A 10,000-page.
He has to go over, he says, I like to go over the Autobot Code with everybody, and it's 10,000 pages. And I like to go word for each inductee. And, like, for, like, several responses, Tailgate's, like, 10,000 pages. 10,000 pages.
Thousand.
The thing is, okay, let me tell you this. That little frame of Tailgate right there, people are saying you can't draw Transformers as an expressive, with expression.
Know, right?
Bull crap! Seriously. That page right there, everyone has had that look on their face at some point, like, what?
But not only that,
some artists can't, And it took Alex Milne completely changing his style and bringing in all of the more cartoonish elements that Nick Roach did to really, pull this out of it. You know, the fact that we're getting expressive artwork from Milne now is
awesome.
A great thing.
I just want to get like a big poster of Tailgate with that 10,000 pages and like give it to my friend who's a teacher.
And hey, it's not even a cheat. Like, it's not even a copy of the same image in the two, which would have been easy. It's like two different images there. At least their details are completely different. So, but I think
I just love the little thing where like he's gonna get started with the appendix. He's gonna start there first, of course. It says, oh, you know, relax. A few weeks of crippling intense study and it'll be over. It might even be... I can't. My mouth just won't say the word.
Fun?
That's the one.
That's the one.
But look at this. The bit above that I love this is in the top left corner where you see Ultramagnus has got all these little data cards, you know, data readers around. And then, like, aligns them. And it even says below, objects aligned. And it's like...
I love his gigantic nameplate.
Oh, that's great, too.
Oh, I know.
So Monty Python, you know, it's spelled duly appointed enforcer of the Tyrus Accord.
Duly appointed enforcer of, what does it say?
Tyrus Accord. It's what it should say, but it's so long, it doesn't fit on the panel.
God. But what about this vignette with Tailgate, where he's, like, talking about bits from his life, and, like, the one I point out is, like, and persuaded Nova Prime to look beyond Cybertron.
Nobody tell him how it turned out.
It's like, ooh, you did that, huh? Well, we got a story for you.
It's more of a 10-point plan.
I love the part where he kept saying, like, you know, and then at this session he revealed himself to me. At this session he told me his name. And then at this session he told me his real name. You know?
Yes. Oh, God, the bit with Red Alert. Yeah, perfect.
Red Alert.
Perfect description with Red Alert what is his
Rung.
Name?
Rung.
Rung, I'm sorry.
Rung. Yeah, I thought you guys were talking about that. I'm sorry, what were you guys talking
no,
about?
No, there's a part in here where, the bit before where Tailgate's going through, like, some of his, like, past, you know, deeds and experiences. And he mentions within the little bit that he was the one that encouraged Nova Prime to look beyond Cybertron, which, of course, you know, created, like... You know, some of the, like, the worst third faction villains, you know, Galvatron and Cyclonus and everything else. So, yeah, irony a bit that he's gotten a little bit buddy-buddy with Cyclonus in that respect. So, that should be fun. Wait till he tells him that.
Yeah, but the stuff with Red Alert, I love that. Red Alert is crazy. He's got problems. And he's hearing things.
He hasn't got no problems. Red Alert's right.
Yeah, that's what's bad.
He appears to be crazy, and he's seen run for what seems like millions of years or something is what it looks like, and he's hearing things, and instantly you're thinking, oh, he must be crazy, until he says, oh, I recorded it.
Yeah.
And they play it, slow it down, and the recording is saying, me kill, me kill, me kill, and it's coming from below the ship. What the hell?
Well.
Without going any further, the whole reason that this is a great comic, and not just this issue, but the whole series, which goes back to me and Brian talking earlier in the week, was that he was talking about, okay, there's like three comics he loves a lot. He loves Amazing Spider-Man. He loves Daredevil. They're like his two comics he looked forward to the most. And he now thinks that More Than Meets the Eye is one of those top three that he loves.
Yeah.
And he said, I love it because it's a comic. He didn't say, I love it because it's a Transformers comic. I love it because it's a good comic. And when we've gotten to the point where we can do that, we can say, this is a great comic, not a great comic for Transformers.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. That's why everybody should be reading this.
Is it saying, because it does say, obviously it does say, me kill, me kill. Mm-hmm. And did he make the point that he was listening to the area below the cell that the Spark Eater had been in, which is outer space. There's nothing below that.
There's nothing below it. That's like your first indication that, oh my God, he's like crazy as hell. There's nothing down there. But then he recorded it.
But the recording is saying, me, kill, but it could be saying, kill me.
Yeah.
So,
it could. But
I think
like,
we know who it is because we've seen the press release.
We know what fan favorite character with a speech impediment and tenuous hold on sanity would make me kill a suitable sentence.
Correct, yeah.
But You know, the funny thing, the thing is, like, if we were supposed to not come to that conclusion, you would think it would be written as kill me, and then we would have to realize that it was written as me kill, but it is parsed as me kill. So, yeah. I don't know. We'll have to find out.
That's just a thought about the comic. Like when the comic started off, we got, what was that, that transmission that was telling us about things that they shouldn't do, and, you know, and all these little hints about things that are going to happen. Again, something, we've gotten a hint on something that's happening, something that's going to happen, but it might not turn out the way we expected, just like everything in this book, and that's what's so great about it.
One of the hints in the message was, don't go to Delphi. But they went to Delphi, and everything turned out fine. So, why not? You know, what is to come? What have they brought back with them? Mm-hmm. Presumably it'd be because the Decepticon Justice Division is going to come gunning for them after the events of that, and that will lead to something very bad.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't want to spoil the ending. I want to tell you who did it or what happened, but, dude, awesome ending.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really cool stuff happened. It's great. Things you won't see happens, and it's really cool.
And it's things that Transformers comics have just literally never done before, but at the same time, stories you can only do with Transformers. You know, it's not being a good comic by telling good stories. It is actually really the whole idea of transformation and the biology of the culture and the prejudices and diseases and neurological conditions that they're very nature as a race creates in them. You know, there is real stuff in here that it is.
I think there is stuff that's definitely part of like the Transformers story, but I think that there's a lot of stuff, like the broader story and a lot of the character development. They don't even have to be Transformers.
But I think Chris McFeely is right though, in the sense that
Firefly or something, for example, and it would still work. That's what's so great. Like you were saying, it's the Odyssey. It could be Greeks.
The broad strokes of it, like that. But I think, the stuff with transformation cogs in this issue, like, you can't get that anywhere else.
Nothing else can incorporate
the idea
of
characters who reject. Well, it seems like Robinson has created the idea that Transformers, because we know they're not monotheistic in the IDW universe. The Transformers seem to believe that transformation comes from the god Adaptus, and these religious movements who reject that notion and that god cut their cogs out, so they're monoformers stuck in one mode, you know. Or there's mention of a character in this issue who's addicted to transforming and who burns through his cogs and has to have them replaced constantly.
We'll have to talk about that off the air, because I'm wondering, who do you guys think that is?
I don't think that's anybody. Given it's Robert, I don't think it's supposed to be a pre-existing character. I'm sure we'll be meeting him in an issue or two.
I have a prediction, but...
And before we leave it, I really like this end of the Ultra Magnus Tailgate stuff, where we go back to that 1984 thing, and he's going through...
Yes.
And he reads it, and one of them is paragraph 5, 1985, and he says, hey, wait a minute, what was that? Why don't we talk about that one? Oh, it's a redundant subclause. It was, you know, added years ago after your time in anticipation of a threat that never materialized. What did the subclause relate to exactly, just out of interest? Thought warfare. What the hell? Thought warfare!
Kids with no memory. Was it something to do with that? It's all...
I'm interested. I want to see where they're going with this shit.
Very much so. And, you know, just to think, a year ago, these two issues would have been an entire trade's worth of material.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, this would have been, like, five comics worth.
Five or six comics. This would have been a trade's
worth of material. This is probably the best Transformers comic we've seen, probably, since Wreckers, I would say.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
I really like this. This may be my favorite Transformers comic. Period at this point, honestly.
I mean, you could almost telegraph it, like, six issues. Like, the first issue would have been taken up with First Aid chatting in Delphi and Swerve and Ratchet talking in the bar, and then it would probably have ended with them bursting into the morgue and finding all the dead bodies. And the second issue would have been First Aid explaining everything, and then it would probably have ended with Pipes and Drift getting infected. And then the third issue would probably have ended where the first part ended, or maybe carried over a little bit. And the fourth part would have been The villain would be revealed at the end, and then the fifth or sixth part would have carried on. It's like you can see how it would have worked, but you can see how it's just pure story, not broken down, not written, you know.
But boy, you would have missed out on a lot of great stuff. That's all I'm saying. Oh,
yeah. Yes, it's such a good comic.
Or you would have. It's just the filler. It's all the blank pages, you know, images.
Yeah, it's not that they could have been exactly the same amount of stuff, and it would have just been stretched out to four large panels with one speech bubble each.
I know this one's in my top five, so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Look forward to it.
All right.
I can't believe I'm actually looking forward to reading Transformers.
I love it. I'm so glad that we are living in this time.
Good times.
We're in a lot better shape than G.I. Joe fans.
Oh, man,
there's a bit of news we didn't report on.
You just gutted me.
What happened there? Was it retaliation?
My God, I was looking forward to June. Oh, what the hell happened?
G.I. Joe has been put off for the next 9 months so they could actually do it 3D rendering.
Woo-hoo, yeah. That's what they say, but there's these words coming down that they want to add more scenes with Channing Tatum because as terrible as he was in the first movie, like he's been in some good things since. It's a bit spoilery, but the trailers have made it obvious that Duke and all the other Joes, except for the main few, die at the start. So what I'm really, really hoping for is like at the end of the film now, it's just dubbed and it's like, this is Doc at headquarters. Duke's come out of his coma.
I'm like the other day. That's awesome.
But the thing is, there's been rumors going around that G.I. Joe, they used this as an excuse because they were too afraid they were going to lose money because it was supposed to come out the same week as Amazing Spider-Man.
Hmm.
And so,
well, I think the amazing failure of Battleship has also put the wind up them.
I loved Battleship!
I thought Battleship was tremendous fun! I mean, I don't know who the dumbwit was that thought postponing it for a month after the European release and putting up it up against the fucking Avengers. Well, that was a good idea. Like, I think it would have made its money in America if it had come out before Avengers did. I mean, I think it made its money back in foreign markets before it launched in America. It's big and it's dumb. It's completely retarded as a film, but it's entirely entertaining.
I had so much fun with this movie.
Totally.
Yeah.
Drop some lead on these motherfuckers.
All I have to tell people is they Tokyo Drift a battleship.
I know.
Who is that?
I don't even know how you do that.
Exactly, that's
it
how you
involves an anchor and a lot of physics.
a lot of ignoring physics, or
apparently, I need to rent this when it comes out on video, which will probably next week, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be out within the next month.
If you could go watch it, like at your dollar show, go watch it because it's so fun just for that scene. You're like, oh yeah.
Wow.
I'd forgotten that the guy who's the lead in that was Gambit in Wolverine Origins 2. He's about as terrible.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. Okay. Well,
all right.
Sounds good.
And Liam Neeson doesn't get to do much.
I don't care.
That's too bad. I really
That's
like when he's.
That's the reason I'd go to see it.
No. There's a scene with Liam Neeson. I know we're getting off track. Where he gets upset and his accent comes out. I just melted. I'm like,
I'll have a chicken bite.
Does he fall into a pit and has to punch wolves? Because that might get me to
sleep. Yeah. Does he go on a rampage to find his daughter? No? Okay.
Well, sort of. He is trapped on the other side of a force field from her.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be then, maybe.
Does he punch the force field?
He doesn't punch anything. He doesn't get to punch anything.
Damn it!
Man.
He just stands on the bow of a ship.
All right. Cool. All right, well, Nicole, then. Tell us, what are you going to tell us about?
All right.
You're telling us about the Doctor Who thing, right? Yes?
A new number one. It's the Star Trek.
All kinds of drinking is happening today, folks.
I know.
It's all Nicole's fault, too. We got a number one. She went offline earlier. Good things are happening.
Sorry. So, yeah. Well, it's not zombies. And it's
No, those happened here in America, though.
No, let's not stop that.
I came close to wanting to review my Ninja Turtles, but I reviewed this instead. So, there you go. Okay, so it's the crossover Star Trek Next Generation and Doctor Who. We've been talking, well, they revealed this like at the beginning of the year, that there's going to be a crossover event. It's finally here. So, at the beginning of this, now, you all didn't read this. It was just me, right?
Yeah. I've had a look over it.
I wanted to read it, though, but I didn't get it. Tell me
well,
it's
yeah,
awesome.
Well, yeah, it sold out, and it actually, orders for it exceeded demand, supplies, and the stores got allocated copies, and it's going to a second print.
It's on Comixology, so I was thinking about downloading it before the show.
Well, I'm pretty sure Star Trek fans and Doctor Who fans are both wanting to get this just to see how they're mixing it up. I know. I've been reading the Star Trek comics. I haven't been reading the Doctor Who ones, but so I know what's going on a little bit in the Star Trek universe, but I'm clueless.
Don't think
with
that Doctor. Matters, does it?
Yeah. And I'm thinking it doesn't because I was able to read. I mean, it's like a whole new story, so don't have to worry about that, people. So we're here on Delta 4 in the United Federation of Planets, okay? So you see there's peaceful scene. It looks very futuristic compared to our world. And all of a sudden, they are getting bombarded by what they think is the Borg. And, of course, then that comes with the big title page of Simulation 2. So they're trying to get their prime minister to safety, this planet. And when they come across it, they're saying, well, that's not the Borg that's attacking us. That's some other creature. And you see on the screen, it's the Cybermen. So you've got a little bit of mixing right there. And in the background, I should tell you, you see like some other Star Trek characters. Well, they're not characters, they're races. So you see some Vulcans, you see some humans. So they don't have names yet. So, but then you see that they can't stop these Borgs and Cybermen from attacking. And yes, they are working together. And the Cybermen's one of the Cybermen is the one that actually says the line, resistance is futile. So you're like, oh, that's cool.
Dude, so is there a Borg queen and a Cyber king? That's all I need to know.
Oh,
that would be an unholy mess.
But they have them in the same panel, and it looks pretty cool. They do a really good job with the art with the Cybermen and the Borg. As for some of the other artwork, it's a little too watercolory for me.
It's very photo-referenced, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like I said, the Cybermen and the Borg, they look great on page. The rest, it's going to take some to get used to.
This is all next-gen, right? Next-gen Star Trek?
Yep.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I think the ultimate like Star Trek Doctor Who crossover should be different Doctors in different eras of Star Trek, but
see,
I guess they could only get away with so much.
Yeah, so you've got Picard and the 11th Doctor in this. So, and then after you see the Borg and the Cybermen come in and invading, trying to kidnap for the Prime Minister, we go into the other universe of Doctor Who, where you see Amy freaking out because they're on a chariot race. Well, they're not racing. They're trying to get away on this chariot. Of course, Rory, you got to kind of know the TV show of Doctor Who to understand what's going on a little bit.
Oh, I think the people that are buying this probably know the TV show.
I would think so.
So you see them on the chariot, you know, trying to get away. And they have their whole story that's in Egypt. And course, you know, the doctor says some really outlandish lines. and you see Rory trying to go back into his world when he was he the Samaritan? Or a Spartan?
Centurion.
Centurion. That's what it was. So he's like, you gotta give me a break. I haven't driven one of these for 2,000 years. I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. So they finally try to get to talk to the Pharaoh to let him know that something's going on, and they pretty much save the Pharaoh from an alien that's gone undercover. So, and with this, this is what confused me, because I've never seen this before. The doctor traps this alien in some sort of a gem. I've never seen this in Doctor Who.
I don't think you need to. When it comes to Doctor Who, though, it's not like you don't need to see these things before. The Doctor just reaches in the pocket, pulls something out, and it saves the day.
To me, this is very Ghostbuster-ish. it almost has that same feeling as a proton pack, because this light comes out of it, and it grabs this creature, and it sucks it into this gem.
Well, so, they have Ghostbusters also, so I wouldn't be surprised if they showed up.
Yeah, so it's just like, okay. So I kind of got a little confused with that, but then you see them back in the TARDIS, and we finally get to the mashup where Star Trek and Doctor Who are coming together. They're back in the 1940s, and they walk into a bar, and the Doctor says, I'm going to spoil the last line here, but this is how you guys get into this. So it says, something unusual is here. It's what it says, like an android in a pinstripe suit, where you see Data dressed in the 1940s. And so they're meeting at this bar in 1940s San Francisco, the start of World War II. So
I'm assuming the TARDIS landed in the holodeck.
Ah, see? They didn't show that.
Because they dicked about with that sort of stuff all the time.
Yeah, so.
Dude, like, what should happen is, like, it should be when, like, Data met Mark Twain, and they just, you know, he just shows up, and it teams up with Mark Twain.
for a first issue, I wish I could have seen more collaboration between the two. Like you said, I would like to see the different doctors and the different captains, but honestly, I thought they spent too much time with the Doctor Who. They've hardly spent any time with the Star Trek.
They did. I was leaping through, and I was like, it was Star Trek races, but it was all Who as far as the characters you actually care about being in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, like, only a third of it, if less, is Star Trek. The rest of it's Doctor Who. And it's more of the action-packed scenes.
But I suppose the balance will be addressed, because it does seem to be very much about moving the Doctor Who characters into the Star Trek world and scenario, where some Doctor Who baddies are causing trouble, rather than, you know, if it had required the Enterprise to be shot back in time to meet up with the Doctors in 2012 Cardiff, where every Doctor Who story seems to take place, and, you know, I'm sure the first issue would have focused rather heavily on the Trek characters, but that's just, I think we'll probably expect fairly even balance from here on out.
It wasn't an amazing first issue, but it's one of those ones that the very last page is what gets your attention. And like I said, the artwork, I'm kind of a little iffy on the artwork. It might grow on me.
Who is the art?
Art by J.K. Woodward.
Who's the writer on it, by the way?
The writer is Scott and David Tippin with Tony Lee. So there's three writers on this. So, but as for the art, like I said, it looks very watercolorish, very, very, very soft tones, not a whole lot of details, but it doesn't interfere with the story. But I'd say it wasn't bad, but it wasn't amazing.
It seemed like it got the voices of the characters done very well.
Yeah, like I said, I've been reading the Star Trek ones, so. Yeah, if you know your Star Trek, if you know your Doctor Who, you're going to know these characters. But for a person that doesn't know anything about either one of the universes, it might not appeal to them. So,
cool.
There you go.
Cool. Very cool. All right. I guess that's on to me then.
Yes, it is.
So, again, as I mentioned, we're getting into, you know, some of the season for annuals. I mean, this is our first Batman annual that we've gotten out of the new 52. I'm going to be talking about the Night of the Owls Batman annual number one. This is mostly a Mr. Freeze story. And I think what's interesting about it, and because I really won't go into great detail, because it's pretty much just what you'd expect out of a Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze does some crazy shit to save Nora.
Right up until, like, the last two pages. And then it's like the biggest what the hell, oh my god, horrible thing ever. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, very shocking.
Okay. So it sounds like he's not from the Earth 2 universe, because he doesn't have a good relationship, is what you're saying, right?
Well I'll tell you, and I'm going to spoil this. So let me tell
you, this is one you got to just drop the spoilers on this one.
If you don't want to be spoiled in the story, just skip ahead now because I'm going to really go into detail as far as the.
Or
the,
if you want to save $5 because it is a $5 comic.
It's a good book. I mean, I don't want to say it isn't a good book. It's a pretty good book.
Oh God, it's a good book. I mean, I have not yet read Snyder's Batman except for the first issue because I think I've mentioned it before. Like I really just kicked myself and said. Oh, I should have got this. Now I have to get the trades. Because I got the trades. I have the first trade here, and I haven't read it yet. But I'm not reading it, and I haven't done anything more than leaf this. But even then, I was still looking forward to this, because it was like, Scott Snyder does Mr. Freeze. Yes. Yes, this, yes, yes. Yeah. Just, yes.
Now did Snyder write the annual?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, that's one strike, in the favor of the DC's annuals this week compared to Marvel's.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
So, this story starts out with a little sort of piece with a young Victor and his mom, and they're going to go make a snowman for some, festival. Maybe.
Contest.
It's the first snow festival or
it's the first snow festival. So, there you go. And I tried to look this up. I'm not familiar with this tradition, but she talks about using an apple to make the snowman, and I'm not really clear on how that works. I desperately tried to look it up and could not find anything. It'll play a little bit of a part later. But anyway, so she's talking about how they're going to use this, and it's going to be better than like the clown faces on most snowmen. And so he's walking ahead of her and starts talking about wanting to make it big and so big it'll last through the spring, and then realizes that she's not talking. And turns around, and there's the apple in the snow, and a hole in the ice, and Mama's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And what it turns out is this is a story that Victor is talking with one of the therapists at Arkham, and he sort of asks him questions about it, and it turns out his mother didn't die, but she was, I think he mentions here that she was a bit debilitated, and Victor ends the, basically doesn't want to continue the conversation and asks for a crayon, which therapist doesn't really understand why he would want a crayon because he can't do anything with it. And Victor just basically doesn't tell him why he wants it. He says he wants to use it as a, does he say? Yeah, I think he says he wants to use it as like an insulator or something. Then breaks the guy's neck, takes the crayon anyway, and begins like
at the very. You misunderstand me, doctor. That was not a request.
Great.
Awesome.
So,
Why can't that guy do the voice for everything?
Is what I was going to say.
Michael Ansara is Mr. Freeze. You look at Arkham City, and that's just Mole Marsh doing his best Michael Ansara.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty
where a warm hand waits for mine. I would kill for that.
Speaking of Arkham City, I forgot to mention that a DLC came out, Harley Quinn's Revenge.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it came out this week.
Why is my PS3 broken, stupid burglar?
I'm sorry.
Damn it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What begins is very typical Victor Freeze breakout sequence where he gets the whole of Arkham like on ice and spits like frozen liquid onto people and, typical Victor Freeze stuff. Takes his armor.
They need to stop keeping that shit in the same building.
I know. It's like that needs to be somewhere.
No, look, I respect that that is a sick man mentally, and he should be in somewhere that he can get help. But can the police not impound that and just at least down the road?
Right.
Instead of next door.
Right. So Victor steals a truck, breaks into Iceberg Lounge. Now, this is a bit that I think incorporated parts of what was going on over in Detective, right? Wasn't there a Penguin?
I don't know all the details.
I don't either.
There was a story.
Basically, what it looks like is Victor was helping to develop the serum that actually woke up all the Talon assassins. And I think was in cahoots a little bit with Penguin, and even makes a little neat little bit here where he basically tells the Penguin how to make it look like a robbery, because all Freeze really wants are his guns. And he wants Nora, and he wants to kill Bruce. That's basically his thing. And then we get a...
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing they've done here with this is that they have substituted I don't know what the most recent comic telling of Freeze's origin has been, but if you remember the cartoon...
they've essentially just substituted Ferris Boyle with Bruce Wayne here.
Right, exactly. And it's almost, it is very, very much the same story here where then they do this little flashback where Victor's working at the, is he supposed to be albino? Have they made him albino in this?
Yeah.
Don't know.
It seems to be, but... anyway, he's working at the cryogenics lab for Wayne Tech, and Bruce is like, well, that's cool, but we want, you know, other ice stuff, you know, but not frozen people. So if you could get rid of all that, that'd be great. And he's like, no, no, I've got cool stuff. He's like, all right, but really, we should get away with, from the frozen people thing. And, Victor goes, and so we flash back, and you see Nora in this sequence as well, and he's talking about finding, you know, that there's a cure for her now, and he just has to figure out how to wake her up at this point. flash to him breaking in, I guess, to Wayne Tech to take Nora out, and it's some other frozen dude. He's very disappointed at that. little bit of a fight sequence here with... Damien and Nightwing, but again, I mean, this is all very straightforward, you know, Victor Freeze stuff. There's nothing in this so far that is like really
Mr. Freeze goes on an obsessed quest to resurrect to Nora. His dead yeah. frozen wife. There's nothing special here,
you know. And we get the bit.
I mean, I think the mother stuff at the start was new, you know.
Yes.
And you know, you're reading it's like I don't think the comics have had him actively blaming Wayne for taking the hand and causing the accident the way Ferris Boyle did in the cartoon before. So that's new. And it just feels like this is just them reestablishing Mr. Freeze with an extra little bit of, oh, look at that, he had a bad childhood experience with ice, and like every Batman villain ever, he took his bad childhood experience and made a career out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the cryo
that's
thing.
That's doing
yeah.
wrong.
Throw, you know, yeah, he gets his injury by throwing a chair and the cryo tanks explode on him, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah.
They explain why he has to wear the goggles all the time.
Blah, blah, blah. Yes, it's a very straightforward, and that's why I'm literally, as I'm reading through this, I'm like, okay, this is pretty good, but, you know, this is pretty... You know, straightforward Victor Freeze stuff, you know. And
you know, anytime I read a Mr. Freeze story, if I can hear Michael Ansara's voice in the dialogue, then it's a fine Mr. Freeze story, as
yeah.
far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
This is a really good story for someone that's not familiar with Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But we're going to just hold on. Yeah.
Hold your horses
hold
there.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say,
so,
until.
So Bruce claims to be on the roof, and Victor comes to the roof, and there's Nora in the cryo tank. And, of course, Batman shows up with, like, a heat gauntlet thing and starts fighting with Victor. And again, he's talking about how he wants Wayne dead and he wants his wife back. And there's a bit more of the fight sequence, and he goes to try to... what is it? I'm trying to get the sequence of events here, because this is where, like... The wheels come off in this sequence here as he's fighting with Batman. Because Batman's basically very adamant that he's not going to let Freeze take Nora. And you're kind of like, you know, the dude just wants to, like, take his wife.
Dude, yeah.
He just wants
yeah.
to take his wife and go, you know. He's going to leave your city. He's going to leave you alone. You know, maybe he's going to try to hurt Wayne, but, you know, maybe you can talk him out of that, you know.
Also, you're Batman, no big danger.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you're Batman. You're not going to get hurt or whatever. And then Batman drops a bomb on all of us. Her name is Nora Fields. She was frozen. She was born in 1943.
What?
She was the first recipient of cryogenic freezing. She had a heart condition that they couldn't cure, and cryogenics was a new thing they wanted to try out. And so, like, she was engaged and to this young lawyer and everything, and then she was going to die, and so she was cryogenically frozen at the age of 25. A young Victor, when he started to study cryogenics when he went to college, did his entire, you know, doctoral study on her, became obsessed with her, so much so that he thought he was actually in love with her and has started to call her his wife, and he's going to save her and all this stuff.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Yeah! Exactly! right? Because yeah. now they have taken the one, like, I mean, because it's always been the deal where it's like, Victor, you feel a certain amount of sympathy for the character because you're like, really at the heart of this, he's trying to protect, you know, someone that he loves, you know, the love of his life. He's done this thing to try to protect her and save her life, and really all he wants to do is, like, ultimately just fix that. And if he would, he might be okay. Like, there's chance for redemption for this character. Now, he's just fucking insane.
He's now a Joker. He's basically a guy that has no redeemable qualities, what you're saying?
In a lot of ways, yeah. I mean, no redeemable qualities. But he's certainly... It's lost that thing where it's like, now he's so obsessed with this person he doesn't know. So now it's like, oh my god, he's trying to protect this person that he really doesn't even know and doesn't know him. And even if woke up, it would be a horrible, horrible thing. You know, it's just... I don't know. I'm like, it makes me feel a little ill. In just the sense that it's like, that is something, you know, you talk about something that's iconic. It doesn't get much more, you know, it's mm-hmm. something that's been around for a while, and something that's ingrained is this whole idea that, you know, Nora is Victor's wife. And now that's, no more. That's gone. That's not,
I think that's the way of things. DC is doing with this whole new 52 is just retelling every story like, okay, how are we going to shock the fandom this week?
But I'm like, what's the long-term implications of that? Yeah, it's great to shock people, but then what, you know?
Look at what they did to Wonder Woman and her origins.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
That's a whole new ball game there.
Yeah.
So.
That no one knew about before. but, you know, just saying. But yeah. And then, so anyway, Batman uses it. To sum this up, though, Batman uses a heat thing and... stops Freeze, and
he uses some fire and scares him away, just like the Frankenstein monster.
He uses some heat chemical or something.
Batman, and save my not wife next time.
But the denouement here is another scene where Victor's pushing around his now semi-invalid mother, who apparently has, you know, probably short-term memory loss and other, you know, maybe issues from having been frozen for so long. And she's talking about, oh, are we going to go, you know, carve the apples, you know, carve the snowman and stuff. And I've already started, and you can see where she'd, like, cut these eyes out into her hand, which, of course, are reminiscent of the
of an apple. Cut the apple into the eyes.
Right,
of your hand.
Yeah. It cut the apple, yeah.
Choose your words. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's supposed to be eyes, but they're, of course, they're red and bloody, and they look like the Mr. Freeze's eyes.
His goggles.
His goggles. And, you know, so he does the compassionate thing. He gently kisses her on the head and pushes her into the water.
Ah,
wasn't that nice of him?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's an established thing, though, that Mr. Freeze did used to freeze small animals when he was young. You know, he couldn't
become obsessed
with cryogenics because it was his science. Like, he actually had to be. He's been like a burgeoning. He's had that burgeoning psychopath element to his backstory for a while now.
Oh yeah,
as well.
That's not new. I mean, no, and he even said it earlier in here, talking about freezing small animals or parts of animals, it's like, can't you just freeze the whole thing? Why are we doing just the leg? That's really.
Wasn't that penguin that was saying that though? He used to do that too.
I didn't remember if it was in this issue or not, but I knew it was a thing that wasn't new as far as this issue
goes. Yeah, I think he did talk about it like to the therapist or something.
And that was the sort of thing that always sat kind of ill with Freeze's backstory is the idea. So I mean, I'm not in favor of this. You know, I can't. It's interesting. It's a darker take on the character, but it's like the same as with the lizard. Really, you know, every Mr. Freeze story does have a tendency to be the same.
Right.
They've changed the paradigm up a little bit with this one now. So yeah, I'm not uninterested by it. They've gone back to the idea that there was always something wrong with him. You know, it's like every villain is like, oh, you know, Arnold Wesker used to be good with puppets, and then one day he was bad with puppets, and he embarked on a puppet.
I don't mind him updating the origins and stuff like that, as long as they didn't just turn him into a guy that used to rob banks and just so happens now has freeze powers.
Yeah, oh, no laws. No, that's still the worst thing ever. Yeah.
No. But anyway, yeah. I mean, that's the thrust of it. I know that some people are...
Heatwave used to like fire a lot as a child and then got locked in a meat locker and didn't like the cold, so now he makes fires for work. That's a flash villain, but it's like, you know.
But no, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's interesting. Like I said, I'm not 100% there. It's like I have to have time to adjust. It's a little bit of a switch for me, but I think, I mean, it's definitely, the comic is very well done. It's very well read. It's definitely something I think I recommend picking up. But I'm just gonna.
I enjoyed this issue.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was really good.
Oh definitely. I mean, I was shocked when I got to the end, you know, because they're hitting all the main beats of your average Mr. Freeze story with the extra bit of the mum at the start. And then, you know, they throw that stinger with the mum in at the end on top of what you've already just learned. And it's like, oh, Victor, you crazy.
Yeah, you're batshit crazy.
No, but the thing is, this is a good story. It's just one-shot story. You got the beginning, middle, and end.
Annual, you know,
you don't have to read it.
And I have just so perpetually associated the cartoon voice with Mr. Freeze in my head. Like, that's the first thing that snaps to mind when I think of Mr. Freeze. That if I can read the dialogue and feel that they have that right, I feel that they have... Because, I mean, you know, the whole point of Mr. Freeze is that the emotion doesn't come through. And if they can write cold, emotionless dialogue that I can imagine as being Michael Ansara in my head, I feel like whatever else they do with him in the story, the writers got the character enough for me to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he definitely has that here.
Cool. It's good. Pick it up. All right. Chris Mefeely, then.
Right. Okay. So, I am going to talk about something that did come out last week, but actually which we haven't talked about at all this month, which came out all of last month, one issue every week, was the Journey into Mystery New Mutants crossover, Exiled. It started with a one-shot the first week of the month, and then Journey and New Mutants double shipped this week for a five-part story, because it was a five-week month in May, and this was Marvel's little extra mini-event thing to keep the books rotating around. The story is, I was a little surprised when I started it, because, well, at the heart of it, this is a Journey into Mystery story. Raiders of New Mutants, I would hope, will enjoy this, because it's a good story. But it is a Journey into Mystery story that has extruded itself upon New Mutants.
Mm.
Because
I would ask, are there New Mutants readers, is what I would ask.
Does that book, honestly,
I'd never see it in my comic shops. I didn't even know it was still being published until this
story
showed
up. Well, suffice it to say, five times more readers required extra copies of New Mutants this month than Journey into Mystery readers did.
I had to go grab like the new Mutant issues off of the back stock.
Now I haven't read any of it, but the new Mutant issues I didn't pick up, but I did notice that all of them, including the first chapter, is on Comixology.
Well, no, you will need the New Mutants, because
I will need those.
Okay. This is part one, part two, part three, part four, part five. This is not jumpy back and forth.
There's like a one issue, one shot to start,
yeah,
right?
One shot and then Journey, one shot and then Journey, New Mutants, Journey, New Mutants.
Right.
Yeah, because like the first issue is just called Exiled, right? That's like the first one shot,
Exiled. Exiled on it.
And honestly, I think that's why I did not enjoy this Journey into Mystery, because I was not reading New Mutants with it. So when I picked up this last issue, I'm like, what the hell just happened? I am so lost.
Oh, yeah, you got to read the New Mutants. If you didn't read the New Mutants, you got to read them. I mean, the thing is, each issue is not individually credited to Gillen on the Journeys and Abnett and Lanning on the New Mutants. Both Journey and New Mutants are credited to all three. And who's the artist? Just pop it open. The same artist draws all five parts, and that is Carmine Di Gian Domenico. Foreign mangling. So the plot of this one is very much a Journey into Mystery story, because it is the continuation of the story of the Deseer from Journey into Mystery. Now, they have been rolling around in the pages of Journey into Mystery since Gillen did his fill-in arc on Thor. And to be honest, I was getting a little tired of them. I don't not like them. I liked them a lot when they were introduced, because they represented that whole just really high myth that Gillen was bringing into the book, but they have been in, like, except for the last little arc with the terrorism myth, they've basically been in everything
you know, they were the core of the deal between Loki and Mephisto and Hela in the Siege tie-ins Gillen did, and then like they were in the Siege Aftermath stuff with Mephisto, and then Loki went and got them to be his army in the Fear Itself tie-in, and they were all over it, and I was like, is the story with these guys done? Like, where are we going with this? You know, but this, but you know, it does not. At first, I went again, the Deceiver, really, after like one or two issues of this. But as the story rolled on, and particularly in the last two parts, I'm not going to go too heavily into spoilers on this one. It becomes apparent that this is the end of their story. This is actually going back to their myth and their origin and bringing their story full circle. The story is that, it's funny. Over the last couple of issues of Journey into Mystery and New Mutants, it feels like the seeds have been put in place because Mephisto's been appearing over in the New Mutants. He's kind of got shacked up with Magma, as I don't know the specifics of it, but they went on a date. I don't know why. I understand that Mephisto's been written quite differently in the two books. And the New Mutants were the recipients of one of the Hell Puppies from Journey into Mystery.
Yeah, I remember and that.
It feels like the linking, the lines are there, but those have nothing to do with what the story eventually turns out to be. When it turns out that the guy who's moved in across the street from the New Mutants is the Asgardian god. I don't know if he's a warrior or if he's a god. Actually, come to think of it, but Sigurd.
He's a god.
And he's in hiding.
No, he was a warrior.
Yeah, he was a warrior and from the time of Bor, Odin's father,
right.
And he's been in hiding ever since. And when the Asgardians just come knocking on the New Mutants' door to get the puppy back, because you really shouldn't let that be out there. It's a bad idea. I think that was the reason. Anyway, my memory's actually just doing a little skip on me for why the gods came down to knock on the door. But basically, he peeps out through the Venetian blinds, sees the gods across the way, and freaks out. And in order to keep himself hidden, there's the issue in question, he casts a spell that transforms all the Asgardians nearby into human beings. So their memories are all wiped. Thor becomes like a local mechanic. Loki is a little kid who is obsessed with role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons type stuff. Volstagg's the local baker, you know. Oh, and no, here, the puppy was wrong. I've got it there. Like Danny. The other linking point being that for many years now, Danny Moonstar, the new mutants, has been a Valkyrie as a result of a brief foray into Asgard that the X-Men and the New Mutants had back in the 80s. She's been a Valkyrie all the time. She goes over to say hello, and simply by looking at her, Sigurd is able to tell that she is, you know, she's a Valkyrie, and he starts to freak out, and he accidentally winds up by freaking out and accessing his magic. He alerts the Deceiver, still in Mephisto's hell, to his presence, and they have been searching for him all along. As the story goes on, we find out specifically what the deal with all of this is. But so when the Deceiver come, he freaks out, casts the spell, all the Asgardians transformed into people. With the New Mutants being the only people who realize that anything has changed around them, they have to team up with Loki to try and get the spell undone. And you know, the middle chapters are just Asgardians as people tomfoolery. You know, Volstagg is the baker who keeps eating all his stock before he manages to sell it. The Deceiver are recast as a support group for women with food allergies.
God.
Yeah. So they're all like, oh, I've got such terrible hunger, but I can't eat anything. You know? But the spell is just wonky old magic and doesn't hold very well. Like, and the New Mutants, like, they get Loki's help. They manage to go. They appear to manage to have snapped Loki out of the spell, and he spends a whole issue helping them gather up the ingredients to cast the counter spell and everything. And is like, and it's pure Loki as well. Now for the final stage of the spell, all women present must take their tops off.
Nice.
I love Loki.
And then, you know, he finishes the spell and nothing happens, and they go, was something supposed to happen? And Loki's, well, that was fun, but I have to get home for dinner. And he's like, wait, no, but aren't you, no,
Well, we're just pretending. It's the whole middle chapter of the story. Little role-playing fan Loki has been role-playing with the New Mutants all through. And of course, then the Disir choose this moment to break the spell when they finally decide to consume food and are released. And again, as the story moves along, it does do that wonderful thing that Gillen's stories do, where we do get the malleability of myth and story coming into again, and we finally get in full flashback the true origin of the Disir, where they were Bor's Valkyries. That's always been their stories. They're Bor's Valkyries. And the version of the story that we've had in the past was that whenever they turned cannibal, he cursed them to forever be banished from hell, you know, and to only feast on, to only to be able to feast on the spirits of gods. But because gods always go to Valhalla or to hell, and they couldn't enter either of those places, they would starve forever. That was to be their curse. Let's just say that that's not how it went, and that the flesh they lusted after was an entirely different sort of scenario.
This is bad.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with this. I had such a hard time with this.
Yeah. They, shall we say, shirked their duties with Sigurd and his gang of mercenaries, and Bor cursed them as a result of that. And there's only two ways out of the curse, which is that they either kill Sigurd or marry him. And Loki decides to pop down to hell and raise Bor to officiate.
Ah.
And it doesn't go... So, the New Mutants are really the spectators in this. In the middle chapter, when they work with Loki, you know, their presence is most logically felt. But it's almost patently ridiculous that the final chapter is in a New Mutants issue where virtually all they do is speculate as the events of A Journey into Mystery story play out around them. I'm not going to spoil the ending on this one, but it is great. It is the end of the Disir story, and it you really go, ooh, snap, whenever Loki's nasty, he's still the master schemer. All the little pieces Loki has to quickly put into place in an afternoon manage to fall into place, and everything wins for everybody, except for one guy who's not very happy about it, but screw him anyway.
So I need to read this. I need to get those missing issues.
If you are a Journey into Mystery reader, this is what seems like an odd idea for a crossover at first. Quickly proves itself as a key stepping stone and the final chapter in a very long-running story Gillen has been telling with some of the supporting cast of Journey into Mystery. New Mutants readers alone will probably scratch their head and wonder what this is doing in their comic. I mean, the New Mutants are as good a group of characters to insert into it as any, because the link is there with Danny as the Valkyrie being the catalyst for kicking the whole thing off. It's funny that there are more links with Mephisto and with the help of B that aren't exploited. That struck me as a little odd. But it doesn't take away from the you know, I don't feel like I'm reading two issues of another book, which I probably should. If I was a New Mutants reader, I'd probably be weird that this entirely different voice has come into the book. Because the narrative captions from Journey into Mystery are all still there. I swear they're getting cheekier and cheekier as the series goes on, you know. They are so different now from that Sandman-esque magpie rhyme that started the first issue. But they are continuing the story of a story being told to the reader they grow more, when I say cheekier, like what I mean is they grow more and more familiar with the reader. It's like you're constantly coming back to the storyteller, and as the storyteller knows you more, like in real life, like if you to your grandfather's knee or whatever, and as you grow up and as the stories become more and more regularly told, and as you know each other better as storyteller and listener, the way the story is related to you changes. And I think that's what's going on with Journey into Mystery, is that they get more and more familiar, a little bit cheekier, a little bit jokier, a little bit more familiar. Again, just a reflection of that whole, the idea of the story being told to you, the tale told that Gillen has infused Journey into Mystery with from the start. Great one for Journey into Mystery readers, and I would hope if it has any effect on New Mutants readers, it'll be to get them to buy Journey into Mystery.
Yes, please.
If they're gonna put this in a trade, are they gonna put them together?
Oh yeah, they'll have to. Yeah, it'll probably just be called, you know, Journey into Mystery, New Mutants : Exiled. Mm-hmm. It'll
sounds like a good title.
Yeah. They kind of gave up. A lot of series have sort of given up numbering their volumes now at this point. I don't think the New Mutants or Journey trades are numbered, so you know, you'll just have to remember to pick up Exile after you pick up the Terrorism Myth trade from Journey into Mystery.
Or look into the first page and say, collected from blah, 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 blah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That's what I usually do when I'm hunting trades. I look for that.
Oh, but some people are so lazy they won't turn them over, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, continued good reading. A very different sort of story for Journey into Mystery, but one that nonetheless has its unmistakable voice and makes decent use of the New Mutants as characters in there, but who ultimately don't bring anything to the story that another random team of characters, like the Runaways, couldn't have done, for instance,
right.
You know. They're definitely less at home in the story, but that doesn't take away from the quality of the story itself, unless you're going to get really hung up on the fact that it's happening in their comic.
Cool.
And that is Exiled.
Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, we took up so much time with the news that I think we are going to have to cut the show short, so we will not get to talk about the ends of the Earth.
Well, we talked about it.
Which it was good. It was a good comic.
It was good. So,
it was really good. Yeah.
We seem so excited.
is there what, one? How many issues are left in it? Is it one?
Yeah, just one.
Yeah,
one, I think.
Just one. So.
Okay, we totally need to talk about the last issue.
Yeah, we'll talk about the last issue.
Oh yeah,
issue. We'll give it a nice roundup. So good deal. So awesome. There you go. So that's it. That's going to be the show for this week. Good stuff there. You should pick up all the stuff that we talked about. Just
yes.
Because we talked about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely pick up Transformers.
Heck yeah, you should be.
Yeah.
Why are
you
listening to this
already.
Why are you listening to this if you're not reading that comic?
Right. Basically, you should be reading everything.
Stop listening to this. Go buy the comic. Come back and listen to it after you read it.
Or just finish listening to this. And well, you've only got another minute at least.
Yeah. So, whatever.
So, that's it. That's our show. Sorry about last week, again, because, you know, we had a holiday. So, or at least that's what I'm saying. But we try to keep that to a minimum. So
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Holiday. Oh yeah. Next week before Watchmen and some other good comics.
Yeah. Yeah, before Watchmen. That's good. That's highly anticipated. So we'll see.
And it's Minuteman too. So it's at least going to be one of the ones that'll definitely be good.
Yeah.
Darwin Cook. Is that who it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
So very
and
good.
And Don's giving us a recommendation of Takayo.
I thought about picking that one up because I read the original graphic novel of that, and I enjoyed the graphic novel too, but too much going on this month. I might pick up the collections of this when it comes out. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
That's one of that Brian Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming's All Ages book about the, you remember Kung Fu Telekinesis?
Yes. Kung Fu Telekinesis.
Oh my gosh, that sounds awesome.
Sounds fun. So, very good. Alright, well that's it. That's the show. Thanks for listening to us and our panel of experts, as they are, or were, or will be. Awesome. Well, have fun, kids, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.